Tesla is like the kind of giving birth to this new world.
The Tesla car business is like the Trojan horse for Wall Street to try to figure out like, hey, this is much more than a car. This is actually like sentient robots on wheels that are disguised as cars.
By 2030, you're probably going to have freaking Optimus robots on Mars.
Yeah.
At least a couple of them roaming around, maybe building some shit. I've been thinking a lot lately about this sort of like this inevitable age we're going into. Mm-hmm. This inevitable age of AI, autonomous embodied AI systems, all this good stuff. And for those that are not familiar, I started recording already, Emmett. So for those that are not familiar, Emmett Peppers, a good friend of the show. We've had it on multiple times. He runs Good Soil Investment Management. He has followed the Tesla story extremely closely. Those of you that have been in the story since 2012, 2013, probably remember Emmett from the good old Tesla Motors Club forums with Dave Lee and all that stuff. So this is somebody who has followed the story for well over a decade, just like myself. It's crazy. Emmett, we've been following the story for over a decade. How does that make you feel, first of all?
I've spent like, I was doing the math, and like a third of my life has been really like identified as like a Tesla investor above everything else. It's crazy. Yeah. I'm thinking like, what am I going to do one day? I'm going to have like an existential crisis when I like exit my Tesla position someday. It's going to be crazy.
It's like, you know, people have like a midlife crisis. We're all going to have like a Tesla investment. Oh my God, I don't know where to put my money crisis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where is that supposed to go?
Yeah.
Should I keep it in? Anyway, the interesting thing here now with Tesla, the company, is that it's gone, you know, we know it's gone through massive ups and downs. As of recent, it's sort of been, seems like Wall Street's starting to wake up to the whole AI play, the robotaxi play, the humanoid robot play. We saw a couple of Wall Street analysts drastically move up their price targets from the 300s to the 500s. There is also, if you look at, you know, what happened yesterday with the Charlie Kirk Memorial, you saw Trump and Elon getting back together. So curious to see if the 2% move on the stock market today is from that. Anyway, that's kind of like short-term stuff. I don't want to focus too much on that.
Yeah.
But the post you made that I hit you up on, that I sort of got us back together on this pod, is you had a post on X. If one wants to take part in the massive wealth creation with the arrival of AI embodiment, I see no simpler way than to just own Tesla stock for this ride. That's it. That's the post. And I think that's such a wonderful encapsulation of, I think, how a lot of Tesla investors feel. This is how I feel. This is why I've been sort of all in Tesla stock for God knows how long. And it's hard for me to find something that has as a clear path as Tesla has to reach that future. And it doesn't mean that there's no risks. It doesn't mean that it's not going to be bumpy. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to be wrong. Right. There's a lot of like potential variables to the downside, but all in and sort of studying the landscape and understanding sort of what it looks like. I mean, that post just perfectly encapsulated how I felt for a really long time. And so what spurred you to write that post in the first place? Like what came through your head that said, hey, I'm going to sit down and write this post?
Yeah, I mean, I think when Tesla, I mean, I wrote it, I think, on one of the big up days last week, and like all the, you know, chemicals are firing, my dopamine's firing my brain when Tesla has a nice up day, and somehow I come up with these thoughts or ideas that just seem like, yeah, I should put that out there to the public to help embolden other Tesla investors or show the conviction I have publicly, that comes out more when Tesla's having a nice up day, obviously. But to me, that post, I thought it was good because it was like the simplest. I tried to drill it down to the simplest, almost like first principles, not really first principles, but sort of like the simplest Occam's razor way to like, hey, if you believe AI embodiment is coming, then there's no better way than just to own Tesla stock. You don't need to like do anything fancy. You know, I'm just trying to like drill it down to like the simplest solution. If you believe AI embodiment is going to be a big thing, you know, which we do.
Do you think the car business is the aha moment for the general public, the general Wall Street investor and analyst to finally think of the of that story in that way? Because, you know, we've heard Elon talk about, and like this is the esoteric nature of this thing, right? Like a lot of us are so close to it that it becomes second nature that our cars are driving us around. And we're not driving anymore. Like that is a very hard thing to communicate to people that are not paying attention closely to this. And when Elon says, like, you know, hey, we shouldn't really be calling these things cars. They're kind of robots, right? Yeah. Do you think
sentient robots,
right, with V14, do you think that is the vehicle, like, no pun intended, but I should pun it. Do you think this is the vehicle for the general public to be like, oh, wow, so if the car is doing that,
yeah,
I wonder what else could do that as well? And then that's where the human or robot comes in, right? So is that, what do you think about that thesis?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I, as you were saying that, I was thinking, like, you know, the Tesla car business is like the Trojan horse for Wall Street to try to figure out, like, hey, this is much more than a car. This is actually like sentient robots on wheels that are disguised as cars. You know, that's sort of what's unfolding here. And when the FSD 14 and beyond, you know, gets released, it's going to become clear to everyone, like, hey, these cars are like, they're not just robots. They're like AI embodiment on wheels. Like, and now Tesla is going to be producing them in humanoid robot fashion too. So it's like, it's going to be a real like moment, I think, for investors, Wall Street, everyone's going to, I think by the end of this decade, it'll be clear that like this AI embodiment that I think we're envisioning, which is like, you know, all the large language model stuff we're like fascinated by, well, that's going to translate to the physical world and Tesla's at the head of that, you know? And I think that's going to be clear by the end of this decade that it's like in process and it's like, it's there.
What do you think is the biggest variable that needs to happen for that light bulb to go off?
The light bulb to go off with like Wall Street or just the public in general, or what do you think?
Both.
Like,
if you think there's a delineation between them, maybe draw the line and tell me which one. Yeah.
I mean, I think you and I and everyone who's probably watches your channel, most of the people are getting this now, right? And we're like, why can't everyone else see this? Why are we the only, are something wrong? We're trying to investigate and look introspective. Are we seeing the world differently or wrong? No, it's clear to us, but we just have to be patient and let others catch up. Wall Street and then the general public, that's kind of like the way I think it unfolds. And I think it's going to become like the real turning point is going to be when the robo taxis kind of take off and they're making tons of money. Wall Street will like scramble to figure this out, and I think then the stock price is going to zoom up, you know, and then I think the general public's going to be like figuring it out, like when the humanoid robots are showing up and like doing things, whether it's factory work, household chores, you know, we were talking about tennis earlier, picking up tennis balls at the tennis court for us or whatever. You just see a few of these weird cases on TikTok or whatever, and then it's going to just grow quickly from there. And I think in that process, it's going to be like the watershed moment, and that'll all happen within the next 5, 6, 7 years at the most, I think.
So you don't think that Wall Street, like, if you think about the current valuation right now, so I think Tesla has like a PE of like 250 or whatever. It's at 1.
I don't even look at PE anymore. It's like a startup. Tesla's like the massive startup in the history. Like, PE doesn't really apply to Tesla at this point, in my opinion. Yeah.
So that's the point, I guess, that I'm sort of sitting on is, so do you think that Wall Street is still at current valuation, still not fully grasping the long-term valuation that robotaxi could bring? Or do you think they've,
ARK Investment. Okay. I think ARK Investment gets it and they've gotten it for a long time. But I think it's outside of the box of thinking of typical Wall Street. You know, number one, it doesn't fit their current spreadsheet models, or they don't really know how, like, it's an unheard of business feature. I don't even think a lot of the people in Wall Street that are putting these models together even have test driven in a full self-driving Tesla to understand or experienced it. It's crazy. Yeah. And it's like, you and I get it, right? We use it all the time, and we dive into the philosophical difference between the philosophical technology difference between how Tesla's going about solving it versus how Waymo or Zooks or the others are doing it, you know. And Tesla's like end-to-end neural network vision only, you know. And there's still a lot of smart people, like smart engineering type people. I talked to one of my best friends, he's like an engineer guy and smart guy, probably too smart for his own good, you know, but he doesn't think that multi-sensor, he doesn't think vision only is best. He thinks Tesla should have radar and other things. And I'm not going to change his mind, but it just dumbfounds me how, despite the evidence, and he even drives a Tesla regularly, but it just despises me how I can be at such odds with that opinion of someone super smart, you know, and all of us can see like, hey, vision only is about to is solving this. You don't need the radar. You don't need the LiDAR. You know, it's just like, even Wall Street doesn't get that either. And it's just such a different animal in terms of how Tesla's going about solving full self-driving.
So what do you think that is? Do you think that's just time spent in the story? Do you think it's a certain predisposition to this, to like being able to sit down and say, okay, this is the likeliest scenario. Like what do you think that variable is that creates the separation?
That's a great question. It could be, you know, people that are kind of, there's a certain level of intelligence when someone's, I think, too smart for their own good and they're not aware of it themselves, you know? And I think a lot of these people are in Wall Street or tech jobs at other AI companies, and they just think they're so smart, like, and they are smart in 99% of things and know right. But in this particular thing, you have to trust, like, hey, Tesla and Elon, they've tried all the things. They've been doing this for a long time, and they found out that just vision only is the best solution. No noise. And you have to listen to Elon's explanation, and either you don't trust him and you think he's like lying, or you think he's trying to save money and lying or whatever, or you just believe yourself because you think you're the smartest in the room all the time, you know? So that's what I think it is. I think it's like, ultimately it's ego and not enough humility amongst the smart people.
Yeah.
The normally smart people.
Thank you to the sponsor of this podcast, Rebellionaire. Rebellionaire partners with Tesla investors who have at least $2 million in Tesla stock to reach their financial goals. Other investment firms might look at your Tesla position and think, wow, you have way too much. This is way too risky. But Rebellionaire actually embraces the long-term potential of a company like Tesla. They'll also look to maximize your profits by employing different tactics like selling covered calls, adding or trimming, etc. And the Rebellionaire team, which includes Bradford Ferguson and Matt Smith, they do this by spending a lot of time analyzing Tesla, the company, in very novel and unique ways. They've done things like cross-country FSD trips, the self-driving suite that Tesla has. They've done a lot of novel research around the energy sector and the humanoid robot and AI sector as well. Make sure to go to rebellionaire.com/Farzad, rebellionaire.com/Farzad, and that's how they'll know that I sent you. Thank you very much.
And that's like, for me, by the way, see, if you made it this far, none of this is investment or financial advice. I probably should have said
that
at the top.
Right.
But, that's the one thing that always, like, you know, it's the line between being early and being wrong is so blurred. Mm-hmm. And that's why this time is like so interesting following the story, because like the Tesla story specifically, because if you think about the last two aha moments the broader public had about the company, the first one in 2013, when it's like, oh, it's profitable. Okay. So it can work. The second one is like, oh, it's mass market. Okay, it works. Now it's, oh, everything they've built is going to be the embodied AI solution. Oh, okay, what does that mean? And I think the what does it mean is so unbelievably, like, in like it shifts society into a completely different plane, you know? Because if you think about the last two run-ups, it's The theory was it's going to be a new entrant that's doing a better product using a brand new propulsion system, which is the electric vehicle, and that's going to become the new dominant form of transportation. It will take time for it to take hold, but it's going into an existing TAM and taking TAM away from the other ones. So you're basically replacing the TAM with a new thing. But what most people missed is like, well, like you said, that's a Trojan horse. That's the literal vehicle for embodied AI to get spooled up and get the flywheel going. And then that literal vehicle then starts gathering the data and it allows Tesla to start building the foundation for an entire ecosystem of physical products that operate using artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And when you have that, this is not just like, oh, Tesla is going to take market share away from somebody else. They're going to create new markets. It's brand new TAMs that have never existed before. There is no TAM for, there's currently no TAM for a self-driving car that's going to cost less than 40 cents per mile to operate. That doesn't exist. And that's sort of the whole ARC thesis, right? The doors that are going to be opened from having very cheap transportation that is autonomous and the flexibility that offers, And the different form factors that can give you, depending on how you want to package that thing. This is not people are just going to use that instead of driving. No, businesses are going to start coming to you.
Yeah.
You know, the one example I like that I used on a podcast recently is like, okay, fast forward 20 years down the line. What's stopping somebody from taking that toaster van thing, the RoboVan or the Robovan, as Elon likes to call it, turn it into a hair salon on wheels, Yeah. And it just goes to people's homes and you just park it and people can come in, use it and can just go around the town.
I've been looking for that. Yeah, I would pay a lot for that RoboVan hair salon.
You know what I'm saying? But that's like one use case. Then you sort of start thinking, it's like, okay, so if that's possible, what other things are possible, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, and then when you start setting price targets on this thing, I think that's why people are so hesitant to say like, okay, well, this will be the third time you have a crazy run up. So what is the likelihood that the same story has a third crazy run up? And then on top of that, it's like, hey, this new reality, it's going to be such an unbelievable market creator that it's like, I need to see it first because the numbers you're giving me are nuts. So how am I supposed to believe you? So I wonder how much of like the intuition of people not actually sitting down and thinking through the implications. I wonder how much of that is like preventing people from actually jumping on this thing.
Yeah, it's always going to seem expensive, the Tesla stock price. It's always going to feel like it's ahead of where it should be. Just like, remember, I don't know if you remember Amazon, but Amazon stock was like one of the most shorted stocks for like over a decade, you know, and at first just, how are they going to disrupt Barnes and Nobles? And they created this whole e-commerce business that like no one ever really imagined it could be possible, just like one centralized e-commerce platform like that. And now Amazon Web Services, you know, so it's like, sort of like the Amazon stock was always way ahead of the curve. And I feel like the Tesla stock is going to feel always ahead of the curve. Like right now, like you can't, like based on their current business, it seems ridiculously overpriced. So I get why the bears, you know, the shorts and the bears are, so many people are staying away from it because they just don't spend much time studying it. Like Tesla is a real study. Like you got to spend time studying Tesla and the product. And the great thing about Tesla versus like Palantir or other things is like, you can be a consumer yourself. I don't know how to be a consumer of Palantir and test it out, you know, but Tesla, we can drive, we can experience versus our other cars. You know, we can jump in a robo taxi in the Bay Area and try it out. Or you can just try out your friend's Model 3 and do the autopilot and feel how exhilarating the electric propulsion is. You know, you can test out the screen, you know, so it's like, it's available for all of us retail investors to be part of the ride if we're willing to do the work. That's what I love about Tesla and the investment story of Tesla, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. How do you think the robotaxi launch has been going so far?
I think it's going very methodically. I think they're being extra cautious. You know, I would love to get the safety monitors out as soon as possible, but I guess they're waiting for, you know, some more data and more testing of the latest versions of full self-driving. I assume they'll take out of the safety monitors. I think Elon referenced by the end of the year, assuming he meant Austin. Is that your belief or what do you think?
I mean, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if the safety monitors are out before the end of the year. Like my gut tells me end of next month. I don't know why. Great. Like in Austin, I feel like, that's going to be aggressive, right? Because they just opened up the highways, but with people behind the steering wheel and pedal. In Austin, there's certain routes where they'll switch the rider to the driver. I haven't had a chance to, I was traveling for a couple of weeks seeing family. I haven't had a chance to jump back into the robotaxi network for the last 3 weeks. My wife's nursing a shoulder injury, so I've had to like, you know, hunker down in the house and make sure I'm around to help her and stuff. So, but I think, if you think about, okay, so how long is that going to take to validate the data set and whatnot? You know, the one thing that's, I think sometimes it's easy to forget is that Tesla doesn't have the same limitation as Waymo did when ramping up the network to get enough miles. Waymo has been limited by the supply of cars they can use to actually test and run the operations. Tesla makes Waymo's entire fleet every like 5 hours. So it's not a shortage of supply that would allow them to get the miles under their sort of like if they really wanted to, they could just put every single car on the highway and get data they need, the miles, and be like, okay, here you go. We just did a billion miles. We used, you know, 5,000 cars, whatever. Just there's different ways of doing it, right? So what my gut tells me is that I think V14, it seems like V14 is the okay, we're gonna yank the riders out of the cars. And Tesla usually takes about, I think the cycle between it going to employees until we get it, it's about 30 days. Sometimes it's shorter, sometimes it's longer before the general public starts to get some sort of version. My guess is there's been a,
that push to get it to V14 and iron out the kinks, it's probably going to go faster than people think. And not now, second thought, maybe end of October is probably maybe too aggressive. But I would be surprised if they don't yank him by the end of the year. For sure. I think.
Do you think the robotaxis now are using an early version of V14?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think they want to get the internal testing super solid first before they get it out to the, because like you said, you know, they're being very methodical. We already saw what happens. We've seen it multiple times. What happens when you have a boo-boo with a robotaxi versus a boo-boo with a literal Waymo crashing into a literal fire truck.
Yeah.
Nobody knows about
that.
No
one cares.
Yeah. But the robot, but you know, one of my videos, one of my very first videos, the robotaxi dropped me off at the, I said the corner of the intersection, and I literally meant the corner of the intersection. I didn't mean it as like, hey, it was a safe spot. And it's like, oh, look at this idiot saying that, you know, this guy's trying to make it, you know, seem like it's not doing as bad. Okay. So that was a boo-boo. And then it just went everywhere. Fucking MKBHD used it in his own video to like show, look at how bad Tesla did in this situation. I'm like, okay, then you should also show the Waymo crashing into a fire truck if you want to be, if you want to be, you know, fair. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
You know, so
there's so many people rooting against Tesla. It's sad, you know,
I don't even know if they're rooting against Tesla. I just think that it's herd behavior. It's just like, you know, when you are from the outside looking in, and for some reason, it's easier to just shit on something versus root for it, especially when the CEO can be polarizing with what he says. There's a lot less friction to take the negative opinion than the positive opinion, because the positive opinion, it's going to leave you open for scrutiny, because it's not the thing that the majority believes or is paying attention to. And this is why investing in stuff like this can be so difficult for so many people. It's because it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a lot of noise, a lot of FUD, fear, unrest, and doubt. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for multiple reasons. You know, some of these people are just smarter than their own good, and they just think Tesla's fundamentally wrong, and anything that shows their cases that they're right, they're going to pounce on and be like, look, I was right all along. Tesla's wrong here. Or maybe there's shorts trying to short the stock, or maybe there's other competitors to full self-driving, or other competitors to the car business that are trying to like push Tesla down. You know, there's just, I think it's a minority of
people,
but they're very vocal, and that squeaky wheel gets the grease a lot, or the headline clickbait, you know, and overall it's like a minority of investors and people out there, but they're just very squeaky about it, you know?
Very squeaky about it. I know I've asked you this question before last time you were on, but it's been a minute since we last talked. Do you find that there is a parallel to where Tesla's going versus previous things that happened in its history, or do you think this is a brand new thing? Like how are you perceiving the vibe, I guess?
The Tesla stock, you mean, or the Tesla business? Or the
both, stock? Both.
Yeah, I mean, it's always important to make the distinction between the business and the stock, right? Because it's easy for us to get wrapped up and just think, oh, the stock and the business is the same thing. I mean, they're based on the same thing, but a stock is sort of like a derivative of the business, ultimate business, or what investors believe the ultimate business success will be, you know? So it's a different thing in a way, but it's related to the same thing. I don't know. It's just different. Like, it reacts in a different time frame for sure. So I think the Tesla business is the key thing to focus on. And the business of Tesla is going to be, like we're talking about, it's going to be incredible if they can succeed in the robotaxi and they can build out this AI embodiment, humanoid robot stuff. And so the total addressable market, they're creating a brand new like addressable market that's like ginormous, you know, with the entire labor market of humanoids eventually, and all these robots on wheels doing deliveries and creating new things. And so if you're convicted that they're going to succeed in those business cases, which are sort of unheard of and new, then the stock, I think, will follow, but it'll follow in advance of the businesses, if that makes sense. Like, I think the stock will get ahead, you know, as we start realizing this, as we get more convicted on where the business is going, the stock may be delayed to that, but I think the stock will go up in advance of the actual businesses materializing. Does that make sense?
100%. 100%.
Yeah. So I think we're in the beginning stages of the stock advancing before these businesses materialize. Because the robotaxi business materialization in the real world is like, we're right on the fringe of it. You know, it's like, if it's not the end of this year, it's certainly the first half of next year, it feels like, you know, like 90% certain, you know? So maybe 60, 70% certain by the end of this year, but it's like 90% certain, it feels like to me, that by the first half of next year sometime, this is going to be like legitimate business that's growing fast. So as those numbers print on the balance sheet of Tesla's quarterly or maybe semi-annual reports or whatever, then by then the stock will already be way ahead of that, I think. So that means between now and then, I feel like the stock could really run up, you know? I mean, it doesn't mean the stock can't go down 20 or 30% in a short-term feud between Elon and Trump again, or whatever the case may be, or maybe some stock market crash that's like a 10% correction and a government shutdown that we didn't see coming, or whatever it is. There could certainly be volatility, but I think assuming everything else is the same in terms of the macro market and like other geopolitical things, I would see the stock rising, you know, significantly. I mean, this is not investment advice. I just think the stock would likely rise significantly ahead of the robotaxi materializing.
Yeah, I think what's interesting about the robotaxi thing is this light bulb went off for me when I was talking to Larry Goldberg about this a few months ago. When we first tried robotaxi back in June, you know, he was like, hey, if you think about robotaxi launching and Tesla running that network on its own, and like, let's say, you know, we delay the drivers, the actual owners of Teslas adding to the network, and that doesn't happen for another couple years or even longer until, you know, maybe they have the insurance and regulation piece fully fleshed out, you know, because then the question becomes is like, if I'm adding my car to the network, am I responsible? Is Tesla responsible? What happens if something happens to it?
Who takes liability coverage?
Exactly. It should be Tesla because I'm not in the car.
yeah.
You know, so, but anyway, that's something that I'm sure we'll get figured out. It's not a showstopper because the economic, I've been told I use forcing function a lot, but I'm going to say it again. The economic forcing function of having a self-driving car is too great. They will figure that out. That's not going to be a showstopper.
Then maybe they charge 50 cents a mile instead of 40 cents a mile to cover the insurance initially or something.
Exactly. Whatever it is. But in that world, let's say Tesla decides to do it all themselves, and by the time they have it out on, you know, out in the Austin metro area, fully driverless, nobody in the car, no safety people. Same thing in the Bay Area. You know, they just announced that Arizona just gave them the green light. Whatever, pick your markets, and we have 10,000 to 20,000 robotaxis, or 1,000 to 10,000 robotaxis operating. Tesla's obviously going to take a hit from an asset perspective, a capex perspective, however that sits on the balance sheet. It's going to eat into their cash flow. It's going to eat into their cash balance, and it's basically say, hey, now I have these assets sitting in my balance sheet. But then on the P&L, the profit and loss, like the thing that actually shows profitability, when the robotaxi is operational, there's no driver in the car, from day one, this thing's going to be generating positive cash flow, most likely, because the cost to run that robotaxi is going to be so low compared to the fare it's going to charge, especially if it's going to be somewhat competitive against Uber. And they're like, instead of going $1 per mile, they're going, I don't know, 20% below Uber. And if Uber's average is $2.60 nationally and Tesla's just charging $2 for a fare, they massively undercut Uber. And then on the cost, their maximum cost per mile under that scenario, if they have a reasonable ratio of teleoperators to robotaxis, they're going to be well below $1 per mile of cost. So they're pocketing $1 of profit per mile from the start, right? So what does that do to the P&L? What does that do to the analysts that are under, like, you know, because at that point it just becomes a very, and this is where I get so frustrated with Wall Street, because they're like, oh, well, I need to see that on the P&L. My bro, just do the math. Like, just get into Excel. Well, first, get into a robotaxi.
Yeah.
And even before that, first, get into a Tesla with FSD version 13. Then after you have your mind blown, fly to Austin, talk to somebody that has the Tesla network, figure it out. We're all on Twitter. Yeah. Ask us for a ride. We'll show you the robotaxi. And then after that, go into Excel and then be like, okay, what does it look like with 1,000 cars? What does it look like with 10,000 cars? What are the potential, you know, risks? And, you know, how will this, you know, the pace of it, like the pace of the rollout, how is that going to be impacted by regulatory risk and whatever other risks, right? But I think I do wonder, like, when we have a critical mass of robotaxis, let's say 1,000 robotaxis that are operating without a driver, and Tesla's generating profit with this thing, and yeah. they'd be like, okay, it's small, but we're going to start breaking it out on the P&L, and this is what the robotaxi looks like, you know, revenue, cost, profit. Yeah. It's like only with 1,000 cars. I wonder what that's going to do to the stock, you know?
Yeah. And that's like almost Waymo's entire fleet, right? Waymo only has like 1,000 or 2,000 cars, I think, on their entire.
So, yeah. And they're adding 2,000 in the next 12 months. Yeah.
That's what they say. Yeah. I think, you know, we'll see, but they can't scale for anything. You know, they have no way to scale like Tesla. Yeah. So I think it's exactly right. And a big moment for a lot of investors in Wall Street is going to be when Waymo exits Austin, because there's going to be no profitability. There's no way Waymo stays in Austin when everyone's ordering robo-taxis instead of Uber and Waymos, because Tesla's just going to saturate Austin first. I think that's like their home base. They're ready there. I think that hopefully gets turned on by the end of the year, but that's going to be a big moment. I think maybe that's the watershed moment for Wall Street. I don't know.
Do you think that's from an economics perspective, it makes sense, because
why would Waymo stay there if they're not being used, right?
Yeah. Especially when they're on the Uber network. I mean, I think
if they're limited by cars, they could just move their cars to Las Vegas or wherever else they're trying to open up, you know.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, because if you just play this forward, right? If Tesla enters the market and they're undercutting Uber, which by default is Waymo in Austin, because you can't get a Waymo using the Waymo app, you have to use the Uber app.
Yeah.
Then the utilization of the Uber network is going to go down.
Yeah.
And the only way for Uber to bring more drivers. Or to create some sort of a demand for its network, they're going to have to lower the price. And if they lower the price, there's going to be less drivers on the network, because nobody's going to want to drive for less than they're getting paid now. And so their network effects just crumble immediately.
Yeah, I think there will be some amount of Uber in Austin, because some people will just not trust a self-driving car and they're just like always going to want a driver. So there'll be some amount of Uber, but I think Waymo will entirely exit for sure. That's my opinion.
I just wonder what happens when the inevitable post from Elon Musk comes out, let's say January 1st or January 19th. Let's say on my birthday, right? I'm going to make a prediction. On January 19th, 2026, when I turn 39 years old, when I turn 39, Elon Musk is going to, I don't know how old you are, Emmett. I'm going to assume you're a couple years older than I am, but you look better than I do. You're younger than I do. You're taking very good care of yourself. But he creates a post January 19th, 2026. Robotaxi now live for everybody in the Austin metro area, you know, within 50 miles of the airport, whatever.
Yeah.
Hail a robotaxi today and for 20% less than Uber.
Yeah.
Or even like 50%. Something.
Something crazy. Yeah. I think that sounds like a tweet that Elon would say pretty soon.
Right.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I really do wonder, and then so once that happens, there's going to be a 3-month period or 6-month period, depending if, you know, the SEC actually moves reporting to twice a year instead of quarterly. After that point, Tesla should share the financials from that, because the financials should be very good as long as the network is actually good, which from my experience, it's excellent. It's phenomenal. It's so good. You know? I wonder if that will happen. Yeah. I wonder if that will happen.
Right, we're right around the corner. We're knocking on the door of that about to happen. Now, what do you think, Farzad? Just going, that's the like next few months, 6 months, whatever. The last 5 years, it feels like hardly anything's changed compared to what's about to change for the next 5 years. Do you feel that way too?
You mean from like the company perspective, like what?
Yeah, in terms of like what they've done a lot of development on full. They had full self driving on highways. They had some amount of full self driving back in 2020. Here we're at 2025. We're still in development of full. I mean, they've come a long way development wise. But in terms of like how the public perceives Tesla and what they're doing, it's not much. The general public doesn't perceive Tesla much differently than 2020, I would say. But then 5 years from now, it feels like the general public is going to perceive, it's going to be so different for the general public, their experience with what Tesla is. What do you think it looks like 5 years from now?
I think that's a very good observation. I agree with you 100%. I think, you know, what's interesting in the last year is that I've seen the investing community, the Tesla community, shift from, you know, I'll believe it when I see it with FSD to how does no one see this? I've seen that shift in my comments, in my DMs, and the sort of the vibe when I talk to people. It's like, holy shit, do you have FSD? This thing's crazy, right? Yeah. Like that's the sort of vibe I'm getting from the Tesla owner, Tesla investor that experienced it. But there's still a gap between that cohort and everybody else who is smart enough to have a life and not be psychotic like we are, right? And they're actually out there living their lives and, you know, being normal, not fucking crazy. So, so I think by the end of next year, by the end of the decade, I think we're going to start, like, the way I conceptualize the shift is going to be Tesla, the word, or robotaxi, the word, is going to be synonymous with self-driving car. So you know how Kleenex is like the word for a napkin, but it's like Kleenex, or like in the South, a Coke is soda. It's like, what would you like? I'll have a Coke. Okay, what kind? I'll take a Sprite. You know, so it's like that kind of like the branding of the thing becomes the thing. That's how I conceptualize Tesla. It's like, yeah, just get the Tesla. Yeah, just get the robotaxi. You know, and it and when they say that, even if there's going to be people that are coming to the market in the next decade or two that are going to be like, you know, getting into the market, I think it's going to be robotaxi. Robotaxi is going to be the thing that that people will have in their head, but it's just going to be Tesla for a vast majority of situations coming and picking you up. And so the, think about the paradigm shift there is that now you have a, you know, kind of like how EVs a lot of times are like that people think it's a Tesla.
Yeah.
That sort of happened, but it's still like there's still a market penetration issue that Tesla's working through, you know, by going down in the on the sort of like the cost ladder to try and get it to be more affordable. So I think the robotaxi side is going to be vastly different. And then, by 2030, you're probably going to have freaking Optimus robots on Mars.
Yeah.
At least a couple of them roaming around, maybe building some shit. Okay? That's crazy.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. But that's I don't know if it's going to happen by 2030, but there's a chance it'll happen by 2030. But you know where those Optimus robots are definitely going to be? They're definitely going to be in Tesla factories. They're definitely going to be in Tesla facilities. They will probably be in a number of different companies where the robotaxi or the human robots being helpful. And so, or it might be, I don't know, like one of the things I have in my head is like, you know, when Tesla hits scale on Optimus and they're selling, I don't know, let's say 100,000 to a million of these per year, what's stopping a very wealthy jurisdiction or part of the world, like the example I come up with is Dubai, you know, because Dubai has just so much money they literally don't know what to do. They're literally just changing the weather over there.
That was a good idea brainstorm you had with Steve Jurvetson on that. I love Steve Jurvetson, by the way. I'm glad that was a great interview. If anyone hasn't seen it, he's one of my favorites.
He's awesome. His brain, dude, I felt like we talked for a little over an hour and his ideas per second and his like I'm like I felt like I got a brain workout for like a week in an hour. I'm like, holy. And thank God I was like clear for that moment. Cause you know, being a parent, it's kind of hard sometimes to have a fresh brain. My brain was good. And by the end of it, I'm like, holy fuck. What just happened? It's like, and I had to like rewatch the interview like three times. Shout out Steve.
I love listening to him whenever he's on like Tim Ferriss or any podcast. He's one of the people I definitely listen to. So that was good. So he's you brainstormed about like Dubai having a whole bunch of Optimus just like out for the public to use for general purpose, right?
Why not? And that's, those are the opportunities. Okay. So that goes back to one of our initial points is like the paradigm shift is enabled strictly on the technology that Tesla is creating, which is mass market, highly scalable, low cost per unit, embodied AI products. And the car is generation one and the bot is generation two. And it just so happens that generation two will likely be able to do 50 to 80% of physical labor in the next 10 years globally, which is a $40 trillion TAM.
Yeah.
And if you have a, you know, and it's like, and then you go even further. So you know how in the car, your cost per mile is going to plummet. That's going to open up new doors. The human or robot is going to be able to do tasks equivalent to about paying somebody $3 per hour or so, but like 24 hours a day, essentially.
Yeah.
You just,
yeah. And the current, the current $40 trillion TAM, you quoted, that's like current, like what happens when you have like infinite labor? It goes up to like $400 trillion or beyond, exactly, whatever the energy can supply, you know?
So how does one communicate that? It's like impossible.
You just own Tesla stock for the ride. That was back to my post.
Right? I mean, that's okay. Do you think, when do you think Wall Street will start pricing that in, the bot piece? What do you think needs to be the genesis? Because we kind of talked through the robotaxi piece. Like, what's the genesis for, or like, what's the moment where Wall Street's like, shit, okay, let's go. The bot makes sense.
I think they're still catching up to the robotaxi thing right now. They're catching on to that. The humanoid is still like pie in the sky to a lot of them. Like, we'll see how it goes or whatever, you know. But I think as the robotaxi proves itself and like they're going to look for the next thing around the corner, which will be the Optimus, which is, you know, just starting to show up. And so when the Tesla stock price goes to like, my theory is, you know, maybe the robotaxi business supports, like, if that's all Tesla would ever be is a robotaxi business, maybe it supports like a $3 to $5 trillion market cap size company if it's not growing beyond whatever the robotaxi can do with what we currently envision it could do, you know, not the super cool things we can't imagine yet, for example. So Tesla stock is going to get to this market cap, I think, before the robotaxi even really like matures or grows to something super significant. Could be like the next year, I don't know, when the robotaxi is just getting off the ground in a few cities, even like $3 to $5 trillion market cap, people will be like, that's way overpriced. That's like priced in robotaxi all over the world. How is Tesla at this market cap? It's crazy, you know? And then that's when the Optimus robot is being priced in by early investors or people that think ahead, like me and you, that are early and understanding the Optimus robot, you know, concept. So it's always going to feel expensive to most people, especially even Wall Street investors, I think. But they're going to be forced to think about it because they're going to have to question, why is the stock so high? Why is the valuation so high? Is it possible there's something like revolutionary about to happen with this Optimus robot? Let's crunch the numbers. Let's dive into it. Let's explain what that bull case looks like. And Morgan Stanley will have their bull case and, you know, Baird, and they're all, you know, ARK Investment, of course, is early on presenting all this stuff always. They see, I think, you know, as well as we do or better or whatever. So they're, I think, at the forefront of this stuff as well as anyone. But the general traditional Wall Street, you know, they're going to have a hard time catching up forever with Tesla.
I think the signal for that is in the comp plan for Elon.
So yeah, this is a big thing. We should talk about that. The comp plan is a huge signal for, I think, the stock rising appreciably in the next year or two. Elon now, if, you know, I believe there's no, I like, knock on wood, I think that this should pass no problem. But
yeah, I'd be shocked if it doesn't, honestly.
I'd be shocked. Yeah. So assuming it passes, you know, let's knock on wood. Everyone gets their crap together and votes and does their thing.
You know, actually, before you go down your train of thought, you know, I just saw a comment that was hilarious. It's like, hey, Tesla doesn't advertise the cars, but it advertises the comp plan. What the hell is that? There's like Google ads for you. I'm like, you know what? That's a very good point.
Yeah. One matters to the future more than the other in a way. You know?
Yeah. It's funny. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go for it.
No, that's a great comment there. Yeah. I think, once this comp plan is cemented, Elon's like going to let off the reins and be like, all right, the timing of this is perfect with really unleashing robotaxi and then showing off humanoid and the, you know, getting the humanoid robot in their factories and performing tasks next year, the year after. And the stock, I think, can just like, he can hit these milestones faster than we expect. Just like the last comp plan. I remember when the last comp plan came out, it was such a joke on financial media. Everyone was joking about it, like making fun of it. Like, there's no way it becomes a $1 trillion market. There's no way this happened, you know? And, you know, us early investors, like, we saw, like, hey, this is amazing. Like, this could happen. This is the path set forward, I think, can happen. And he reached all his milestones ahead of time. You know, this one, I think, he can reach the milestones ahead of time as well. We'll see. But this is amazing. Like, this gives us a vision. And what is James Stevenson's, a Stevenson indicator, mark off the comp plan milestones. I love that too. I mean, it's just, to me, as a bullish Tesla investor, this is like this is what we want, is to get these comp plans in place with milestones that we can like see and taste with our own eyes, that everyone sees, you know, it's benchmarks, you know, like for Tesla to achieve in performance and the stock to get to certain value, you know, market caps and so forth. And I think he'll beat those milestones, I think. And he'll be the first trillionaire for sure, I think. But it's crazy how he gets, the more wealthy he gets, it's not even like wealth, like traditional sense of wealth. That's the problem. I think too many people, too much of the general public see like, oh, multi-billionaire, trillionaire, Elon Musk or whatever, like that. No one should be that wealthy. Like even the Pope said something recently, which is disappointing.
Which was
like,
from the Vatican, no less. The richest place on the planet. You're trying to, don't even get me started. Shout out Catholics.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Elon's not using his money to buy like yachts or islands. He's like using, he has his wealth in his companies that he's growing, that he rightfully should control because he built it basically, you know? So like, I don't know. He's doing great things for humanity in general, and he's getting demonized for growing these businesses to like do amazing things like convert all of our transportation to sustainable energy or to help get life multiplanetary on Mars and all this stuff. Like, it's just, it's crazy. It bugs me when people don't dive in and they just like see those things and they agree with it without like diving into the context or anything.
Well, it's much easier to give a hot take without doing any work, you know? It's not, I'm guilty of that sometimes too on X. It's kind of, you're like, and I'm like, shit, I probably should not post to that. Anyway, we'll learn. We'll learn. What's interesting about the tranches on the comp plan is the operational one, the top one, is $400 billion in net income per year. I think it was, or is it $400 billion cumulative? I think it's... Mm. Well, which one was it? Let me look it up.
Let me see. Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be producing a crazy amount of net income in time. It's going to be... like they're going to have to give out dividends or something. I think eventually they're just going to have so much wealth, like so much money being printed, they're not going to know what to do with. And I'm excited for that. That's probably, you know, 5-10 years away. It'll be massive, like dividends or something.
It's a milestone. You know. It's $400 billion in adjusted EBITDA. So it's good. I'm going to guess it's cumulative because they have 20 million vehicles delivered. That's cumulative. 10 million active full self-driving subscriptions. That's going to be cumulative. Well, $50 billion adjusted EBITDA. That's confusing, huh?
Yeah.
Is that cumulative or yearly?
No, it's got to be yearly, I would think, right?
It has to be yearly, right?
For the year? Cumulative for the year, maybe?
Yeah, because $400 billion adjusted EBITDA on an $8.5 trillion valuation, that's roughly a 22 PE, whatever that number is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That kind of makes sense. So We'll make sure to get clarification on that, because my understanding was that it's yearly, but for some reason in my head it's like, oh, it's cumulative. No, it's mm-hmm. It has to be yearly. Like if it's a cumulative, that's going to be a piece of cake one to hit. He's going to hit that in like 3 years, not even.
Yeah,
probably. So that being the top operational milestone, makes sense that it would be a yearly. So $400 billion in a $400 billion. Okay. Does that include dividends? Like, have they taken dividends out? You know, like that. Yeah. That's kind of where my head is going. Because once the company's generating that much EBITDA, what are they doing with that? What are they
cash.
Doing with that?
They're just building massive data centers and solar farms or something. Massive factories and mining.
Might
know,
be, huh?
Mines and just trying to spool up as many humanoids as they can, you know?
Yeah. I do wonder if that's like... if that's the point that we're going to get to, where we're going to like, this is where the concept of money becomes blurred, because then it becomes like, why have money when you can just have the assets that do everything for you, mm-hmm. you know? So it's less about having money. It's more about having resources available, something available to you that you can action to get the things that you want or the mm-hmm. things that you need. And instead of having a percentage of the world's money, you have a percentage of the world's capability, you know? I don't even know how I got it on that, but it's like, I've been trying to think through that because, you know, we talk about, hey, like this is, Tesla's going to be one of the first companies that's really going to start catalyzing the movement towards embodied AI. Mm-hmm. In an embodied AI future, when a human or robot can do a lot of physical things for you, it's probably going to be a lot more valuable to have a human or robot than it is to have money.
because
you can deploy that human or robot to do things on your behalf that will either generate an income or do, like, that's why so many rich people don't keep their money in cash. They put it to work by putting it in companies, right? So it's like, how is a human or robot any different, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there'll be a price on every humanoid and the prices will go up and be set at a certain price. But yeah, I think money will always be like the measurement used, the measurement unit used for the value of the robots, I think, you know. So whatever that amount is, there will be a value priced in money for the robots that we'll still have to use. Yeah. Like, you won't trade, I'll trade my three robots for your two robotaxis. You know, it'll be like, how much money is that robotaxi, those two robotaxis?
Of course.
Yeah,
of course. What do you think? I put a poll out yesterday on my X. I was asking my followers what they thought what the maximum would be for somebody to purchase a human or robot that would do 80% of all your physical daily tasks, 100% done. So 80%, 100% done. Let me show you the results, actually.
Yeah, I want to see that.
Yeah. So this is what it looks like. So can you see it? Is it sharing?
Yeah, I see it.
So 30% that would pay $20,000 or less. 43% would pay between $21,000 to $50,000. 16% would pay $51,000 to $100,000. And then 10% would pay $100,000 or $1,000 or more.
I'd be the 10% category for sure.
So
I think more people would be the 10% category when they see other people doing it, but also what you can afford. You know, if someone's, you know, we're making minimum wage, working to make $30,000 a year and living paycheck, they can't afford it. Right. But someone else who's been, had a career they've invested time into and built up to, you know, making $150,000 a year or $250,000 a year and a good career, maybe they can afford the $100,000 one-time payment for a humanoid robot purchase, you know?
Yeah. So that's where I start getting concerned about the transition of this thing. Right. Because this sort of opens up a lot of different possibilities. It's like, okay, so we know that a human or robot is going to be unbelievably valuable if it can do 80% of your physical tasks, 100% done. Just literally think about your daily life, like how many chores, how many things you don't want to do, have it go do work on your behalf, rent it out for other people to do. If you're willing to pay somebody, let's say, the equivalent of $10 an hour to mow your lawn, or $12 an hour, or $15 an hour to mow your lawn, to, you know, come and pick up poop from your yard, from your dogs, you know, to come and clean your house, $20 an hour or whatever. Think about that, you know, I hate to reduce this in a way, like this package, this labor package, which right now we use humans for in the physical world. Mm-hmm. Like, now this labor package can now not just mow your lawn and clean your house and whatever, it can do everything. It can do 80% of physical things.
Yeah.
So the fungibility of that is kind of nuts. And then you think about, okay, how much are people going to be willing to pay for that in a place where you let the free market reign and you just go off of supply and demand? It's like, okay, well, people, you have a limited supply of human or robots that can do 80% of all tasks, 100% done. The demand for that is going to be like insane. Absolutely, completely insane.
Yeah.
Okay, so only the people that have money will be able to afford that. What does that do to the rest of the people? Like, and by default, the ones that have the assets and resources are going to accumulate even more capability, and it's going to start creating this wealth, this widening wealth gap that's already quite large.
Yeah.
And then if I go to the philosophical route a little bit, not even, but like if you view the latest sort of trends in society that we've witnessed, like the Charlie Kirk murder as the perfect example, and like the, you know, a minority of the population, but still a shockingly larger than I thought number of people were celebrating the death of this thing, of Charlie Kirk. So what happens when that subset overlaps with the subset that views this transition and they don't feel like they can have access to it, and they see people are gaining more and more and more power through a human or robots and AI or whatever, and then they start losing their jobs because they are literally being replaced by the thing that really wealthy people are adopting? What is that going to do? So I just made a very heavy thing on you, but I'm really curious to see your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, this is ultimately, the solution is going to be some form of universal basic income. I think with capitalism comes and that's what's these innovations of the humanoid robots, full self-driven AI, is all driven by capitalism. And with capitalism and these innovations, the incentive model for the innovations with the markets and businesses and all that, it just leads to a bigger, you know, have versus have not disparity over time. You know, it's going to be bigger and bigger. But the good thing is, like, even though the haves and have-nots grows bigger and bigger, the have-nots are also going up in time too, right? So, like, the have-nots, they're way better than the have-nots from 50 years ago or 100 years ago to today. And in a few years, when all this stuff happens, I believe, you know, it's going to be a transformation. It takes time. But when I say have-nots, I mean people at the lower end of the, you know, income inequality scales, right? The people that maybe they're unlucky, or maybe they don't want to work hard, or maybe they're, you know, addicted to some kind of bad substance that doesn't let they don't work much or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
Terrible family situation. Terrible family situation.
There's a lot of reasons, right? And some people pull themselves out of it, and some people don't, and some people can, and some people can. It's complicated. And there's always going to be this disparity in capitalism, especially, and there's going to be a lot of people, I think, professing for socialism, some form of socialism, and that's going to increase. Like, we see the mayoral race in New York City, for example, and there's going to be a subset of these people that are going to say, "Oh, we need income, we need equity, we not just equal opportunity, we need equity and outcome too." And that's the difference. And I think if you I guess what I'm trying to say is, the people that don't have a lot, the lower end of the income scale, will be better off still than the people today that are at the lower end of the income scale. There'll be less poverty as measured by today's standards. You know, the standards will change to a higher standard of poverty, for example. But I think there's still going to be that, you know, thou shalt not covet, you know, or the envy, you know, principle, where people, like, I have that myself. I see people better off than me, and I'm like, I want that. You know, there's always that human nature feeling when you see people with these humanoids, for example, like clean up their own yard for themselves, or, you know, whatever. You're going to be like, I want that. Why does that person have it and not me? You know, but at the same time, maybe I'm getting some universal basic income, so all my Netflix and food is paid for, and I don't really have to, you know, I have to, you know, care for myself and care for my yard, but, you know, I don't have the humanoid robot, you know, to order around and do all this other stuff for me, you know? So there's still going to be that feeling of, like, income inequality, I would say, that's increasing, but it's going to be a struggle. And I think the universal basic income is going to have to come into play as a solution. I think it's going to be, I think it could be driven by, like, a robot tax. I've thought about this. Like, there could be, like, a humanoid licensing tax or tax use tax, like, that somehow the government can extract digitally from these humanoids, and also the robots on wheels and everything that they're doing, all the value they give into society in the U.S., for example, the government could be extracting digitally some value and money that it feeds back to everyone who has below a certain income, for example. And I think that could be a solution potentially. But to get there from A to B is, I don't know how exactly it's going to happen. I just think that's the best outcome I can think of, and hopefully has some kind of outcome like that. Because I think if we start saying there's got to be more equitable outcomes, that's socialism. That's like Marxism and socialism. We have to be very careful there. That's when things go awry in every historic experiment of socialism we've ever seen. What do you think?
I grapple with this all, like, literally every day. There is a percentage of the day where my brain just sits on this for a long time. And then anytime there's a major societal event that happens, it shifts how I view it. So the assassination of Charlie Kirk, I was like, okay, we're fucked. Yeah. This is going to be a bad. And then, you know, I'm like, okay, yep. And then I saw his wife's tribute to him last night, and I'm like, oh no, we'll be fine. Dude, she literally forgave his murderer in front of millions of people. I was like, this is one of the most powerful things I've ever seen in my life. Truly, it was unbelievably powerful.
But I thought so too.
You know, it's going to be etched in the history of this country forever. Like this last 10, 11 days are going to mark Charlie's organization is called Turning Point. I don't know if it's a turning point, but the boat has been shifted somewhere. Like, somebody hit the rudder, and now we're going a different way.
I have a question for you on that. I don't want to, just a quick stop, please. Pit stop before you go on. In your area, I know you're like in Austin, it's kind of a progressive area, whatever, but in your area of Texas, are people like talking about it, you know, just on the day, like, oh my gosh.
Everyone's very mournful. I mean, it's not like a topic of conversation that comes up a lot. I also haven't had a chance to really be super social since it happened, because again, my wife's been injured, so I've been sort of a hermit. But I mean, the conversation I do have, I mean, it's like, it's a vast majority, even the people that, you know, I have friends who hate Trump and don't like the administration. Yeah. They're like, it was crazy that it happened.
So
like,
people will talk about it a little bit.
For sure,
here,
a little bit.
No one's talking about it. Like, you talk about it with your friends that you know are conservative, or like within my own family, we talk about it, like my own immediate family, but my extended family, they're not Trump's, they hate Trump. We don't even talk. It's so bizarre. Like,
really?
Everyone, you know,
you're just pushing it under the rug.
Yeah. Everyone, because everyone is aware, like at my kid's school or wherever, like I go to like a tennis thing or whatever.
Yeah,
it's social, and like no one really, unless you know the person for sure, is like as a somewhat conservative like you, then you might talk about it, like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. But in general, like open discourse, it's like the biggest thing happening, like a big assassination, but everyone is afraid to bring it up, because it's just like we don't talk about Bruno, you know, that song, you know, I think that song from it's like you don't talk about it, it's just like, you know, you don't talk about it, you know, it's
that's
just like,
crazy,
it's weird.
That's insane. Yeah. I mean, what that is, it's. I think that is the power of a society that we've built for the last decade or two, where we have been so one-sided on the discourse, and that discourse has been so supercharged with, this is the literal enemy.
Yeah.
That when a terrible thing happens to the quote-unquote enemy, people would rather be quiet than to say, okay, like the worst case scenario is like, okay, I'm glad that happened. And I don't want to say that's the case for all of them, but it could also be very, like very, very large cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. I think that's like, what it is.
You know, it's like, man, I'm really sad that happened, but I was told he's a Nazi, or I was told he's a terrible person. So how can I feel this badly about a Nazi or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And at that point, it's like, okay, but are we surprised that that's the outcome after years and decades of legacy media just being complete and utter dog shit? Like we've seen it with Tesla. We've seen it with the story. And I think that's why so many people in the Tesla community are having this, have had this awakening in the last few years. It's like, we've seen multiple examples of how the media landscape, not even legacy media, social media, everything, the media very much is responsible, has been responsible for a significant percentage of the population's way of thinking and how they arrive at conclusions. Yeah. And it's leaked into the real world in a lot of different ways, at least for the people that have that spend too much time ingesting one side of the of the discussion. And then which is not the majority. The majority of people don't even have time. Like, I think that's sort of like, That's one of the silver linings here, is I think in a way it's sort of a blessing in disguise that so many people don't have the time to get into these rabbit holes, because it's like when something like this happens, humanity takes over. They're like, yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
It's bad that he got shot because of what he said. Like, that's crazy. You know, and then it's created this effect where people are starting to go back and be like, why did he even get, what did he say? And they're like, oh, that was not bad. Oh, no. I kind of agree with that. Oh, wait, that wasn't even what he said.
You know, I've gone on this kick of watching a ton of Charlie Kirk videos, and I love, like, I'm like, wow, this guy was profound with his attitude and how he approached people. And, you know, I saw one the other day where, like, the microphone shut off, the school shut off, so he just got up and stood up in the crowd and started talking to these two girls about whatever they were upset about, and everyone's around him. And, you know, he's just very respectful, and, like, he was an incredible person, and it's just... I think, I mean, it's just the debate. He's bringing around the idea of debate and discernment back to the general public, I think, which is so important. We need to have more debate and to have discernment. In order to have discernment, distinguishing signal from noise or right from wrong or truth from false, you have to have debate. And if you don't challenge ideas with debate, you can't have that. It's just like one way, like a college lecture. That's why college is so indoctrinating, because you have this one way professor who's in a position of authority professing his ideology to all the class. And sure, maybe some class people can ask questions, but he's ready to just push his authoritative stance on them all the time. And there's no real debate for them to witness, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I couldn't agree more.
You know, and I think his, yeah, man, like it's even if I'm somebody who's like, well, I disagree with like your approach or your framing on this topic, and I was probably, you know, my mentality has shifted ever since having a child, but I was still wouldn't have gone out of my way to listen to Charlie Kirk, because I'm like, he's just not my cup of tea, right? But he's still undeniably a phenomenal human being, and undeniably was doing something that the country was hungry for, which is discourse, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to be his legacy. And that is the best possible outcome from the tragic events that happened, is that his legacy is going to endure as a reminder to America that says, even if you disagree with somebody, you still want them to be happy and to benefit from the freedoms that America offers its people. Very, very similar to MLK. You know, it's like, I think about, it's like, why is MLK remembered? It's because of his speech, "I Have a Dream." You know, he's like, he has a dream that we're living in a colorless society, that it doesn't matter what your creed is or what your background is, that you're judged on the character of, that you're judged based on your character and what you bring to society, not the color of your skin. What a beautiful thing. And then he got murdered because of that. And then Charlie, in a very similar way, is like, hey, I stand up for free speech. I want to be able to talk about the things that are important to me. Like, these are the things that are important to me. And I'm going to go into the lion's den and have those discussions with those people. Right.
Yeah.
And then he was deleted because of that. It's like but again, those legacies endure. MLK, everybody knows who MLK is. We have a federal holiday for him, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, anyway, I don't even know how we got on this, but it's a very important, this was the shift of artificial intelligence. Okay. So that's the undercurrent of today's society. That's the undercurrent of today's culture, right? So what you were saying before about the have-nots, which is, you know, we can use that term, but the people on the lower end of the,
I don't want to be like, I'm not the best eloquent speaker, so I'm trying to be sensitive and not like offend anyone. Like, some people think that might be an offensive term. I think people know exactly
you're coming from. The folks that are on the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder, let's say, those folks are still going to benefit from the incoming age of AI. But I really do think, especially in the age of social media and this comparison culture that we've built with social media and Instagram and all this garbage, This is not going to matter. It's going to be this. So even if you're going like this, this is the place that's going to have an issue. And so
the space difference,
the gap.
Yeah,
like, people are not going to think about, like, okay, so people that are let's say in welfare right now, but they have iPhones, they have a home, they have a car, they can pay for fuel. Yeah, they get lottery tickets, but they're still, like, objectively compared to, like, say, the life that we live, we would not trade to be in their position, because their position is a lot more difficult. They're still way better off than people from the 1900s, like 1910 or 1920. But even folks like us that might be on a much better socioeconomic outcome, we're still looking at that and being like, man, that sucks. Like, how can we get you out of there? Or like, it's like, oh man, I wish that person would do more to get themselves out of the situation. Or we don't even know that, we don't even know how they ended up there. Like, the other thing we have to think about too is, like, in this country, in America, a shitty prognosis or a diagnosis of you from a health perspective might fucking wipe you out. That's like, that's a thing that happens in America all the time. It's like, what percentage of all, you know, so that's where I'm like, okay, so how does that gap get closed? And like, The only solution I've been able to come up with, and this is something, like, again, this is sort of like the Tesla story, which is very interesting to think through, because it has other issues with it, but it's like super accessible, game changing technology that will improve your life that is also very affordable. So like, robotaxi at $1 per mile is game changing for a lot of people.
Yeah, people, instead of taking the bus, it'll be cheaper for them to take the robotaxi,
right? A human or robot you can rent for $300 a month that will do 80% of what you need it to do. That, to me, sounds fucking amazing. Like that, and you don't get there unless you are building these for sub $20,000 per year, maybe less. I mean, you could probably get there at $20,000, but that's kind of where in my head, I'm like, you have to get very accessible, affordable, game changing embodied AI products. And then the transitionary period of, like, okay, all the people that are going to lose the jobs to these robots, we need to figure out how to get them either access to these robots or giving them a proper pathway to be able to take advantage of this new economy that's going to be coming. I don't know if that might be UBI. That might be like a thing that where we say, if your job was displaced by AI, you get a 2-year severance package from the government or something. We will cover your, whatever. Like, we'll pay you $20,000 a year for 2 years. We'll give you $40,000, whatever the number is. We'll come up with a number. Be like, hey, we understand you were heavily impacted by artificial intelligence and human robots. Here, we literally, the money we got from implementing these systems, we're going to use to get you back on your feet. And then here's the new economy. Like, what kind of, how do you want to thrive in this new economy? And then at that point, people can make a choice. But I don't know. These are just very early stage ideas because we're still, it's not next year that this is going to happen, but it's next decade.
For sure. 10 years from now, this is going to be all real
stuff. Talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll all be already implemented or just in the midst of trying to figure out how to implement this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be a wacky 10 years coming up. I mean, things are changing fast, and there's going to be a lot of friction on the way for the change. But ultimately, it's for the better good. I mean, I keep thinking of, you can't let perfect be the enemy of good, And progress in technology is good for society as a whole, but it's not perfect, The way it progresses is not perfect. And so you're going to have a lot of people that feel like they're left behind when really their standard of living is better than it was previously, but they're just going to see the people way ahead of them and want that more. And those are going to create bigger feelings of wanting socialism or free handouts from the government. And ultimately there will need to be, I think, some kind of UBI, but that people can live off of comfortably, but then you'll have the option to enter the economy and do extra for more stuff maybe,
Yeah. I think the ultimate test is going to be, do the majority of the individuals, let's say 80% plus, this should be the KPI. Ideally, it should be 100%, but let's start at 80%. Let's set a realistic target. Do 80% of the people that were directly impacted by the disruption of AI and put them out of work, do they feel better off in this new economy than they did beforehand, right? Mm. So as before, they had to work to live.
Yeah.
Does this new economy is like, I don't have to work to live and I have enough for me to be happy and to do what I need to do.
Yeah.
That should be the metric that we use. And if that's true, then we're going down the right path. If that's not true, that's the wrong path.
But there's going to be a whole nother issue of a meaning crisis, I think, as well for these people.
Oh, yeah.
Because, your job is your identity a lot of time. When I left my previous job at Interactive Brokers and Sales, that was like a big part of my identity along with being a Tesla investor. And then when I left that, I was like, all right, what am I now? Like, it's you have to do soul search. So there's going to be a lot of people, whether they're depressed or finding religion or whatnot, there's going to be a lot of searching for meaning, I think, happening in our society. Yeah.
I think there's going to be a religion boom and a spirituality boom for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's coming. But I will say like the people that go through that, but they have a financial, like they have a foundation that they can rely on where they don't, there's no existential, like, oh, I'm not going to lose my house. I have money to do what I still want to do. I'm still going to be able to feed my family and myself and my children. I'm still going to be able to live in what I deem as comfort. It's way easier to go through that existential crisis and way less disruptive and way less chaotic going through that journey when you know you are secure and your hierarchy of needs are met versus one that doesn't. Because then if you're put in that position and you are in a point of crisis and next month you're going to get evicted and you don't know how you're going to pay for food, that creates, and then if you have a political movement that starts saying it's Elon's fault that you're here,
that the trillionaire, his fault,
right? That's where and you know it's already happened. It's the evil billionaire thing. Bernie Sanders from his three houses as a millionaire, multimillionaire, is telling everybody that the reason why Elon Musk is getting his pay package is because he's a bad person. And it's already happening.
Yeah.
So
that's why we need more debate, more discourse, more, a lot of times it's just like a one way thing. We're just like Bernie Sanders or just Elizabeth Warren, just speaking their mind, but they're not really debating the ideas with anyone. I feel like we need to get back to that. Maybe there'll be more like debate style podcast in honor of Charlie Kirk or something. I don't know. I hope there is, because I think that's so important for people to kind of discern truth from that.
I agree. You know, yeah. I think a lot of those folks have a right to be upset. Honestly, I think America has failed a lot of people in a lot of different ways, unfortunately. So I get why they would be upset, but America has also created a pathway, like a person like myself, that, you know, I don't come from a lot. You know, like we came to the States, and, you know, my parents went through some multiple very difficult financial situations, and you know, I'm doing great because of because what America gave me as an opportunity.
American dream, right? There's so many millions of American dreams happening every year here, so it's amazing. Yeah,
straight up. So now we just got to use the new age of technology to enable that American dream for everybody, like truly enable it for everybody. And then after that, if people can't take advantage of it, then at some point we have to be confident in saying it's on you.
Yeah.
It's on you. Like it's on you. What else do you want to, like, it's on you. You have to take the bull by the horns. And a lot of people would say, well, it's already there in America. No one's stopping anybody that lives in a shit situation to get on a bus and go somewhere where there's better opportunity. Yeah. But it's like that friction to get over that hump is massive. It's massive because it's such a difficult thing to do. So anyway, it's, there's so much to talk about. Did you want to hit anything else here, Emmett, before we wrap it up?
No, I think that covers most of the stuff. I think we covered a lot, you know, as we're talking. Tesla's experiencing a little bit of the Trump bump of them getting back together, which is nice. hopefully. I thought that the one thing I want to mention to you that I thought was interesting was that news of, I think it was NHTSA announced that the autonomous driving approvals will be based on performance metrics, not on sensors.
That's not an accurate piece. I just came to find out.
That yesterday. Wasn't right. Oh.
No. So it's a little bit more complex than that, it seems. I still haven't done the due diligence to really, really deep dive it, but I did that top line statement is not
I was hoping
accurate.
That was true. Yeah, I wanted to check with you on that. Yeah.
But that is the logical conclusion that's going to come regardless. It's going to happen. I mean, obviously, you know, are you going to force Tesla to put LiDAR on all their cars when their vision system already does it? No, of course not.
Yeah, I bet there's lobbyists out there trying to get that to happen, though. But hopefully Tesla has their own lobbyists fighting against it. We'll see.
Elon and Trump shook hands. You know, that's what it is. Like, bruh, just get me NHTSA. All right, I got you. Just stop calling me a freaking, whatever.
Yeah. Just tell Sean Duffy the deal. Yeah.
Yeah. You know. All right. Where can people find you, Emmett?
Just on X is fine. Just my name, Emmett Peppers. You know, I just post whatever thoughts I have from time to time. You know, not trying to, whatever I find, I think is useful for people. I know most people who follow me because of Tesla primarily. So, you know, my thoughts on Tesla, if I have any thoughts that I think are useful, I try to post them. You know, I think there's so many Tesla fanatics out there, though, that there's so much incredible info you can get now on X or online from tons of people that just like, study it as much as I do or you do or more so, and it's incredible. So I'm happy that that's we're like, you know, third generation Tesla analysts, and you know, the second generation is still thriving and the first generation is just getting off, you know, off the ground now, which is like it multiplies every generation, so it's cool to see.
The ecosystem has been built and now it's sort of propagating everywhere, and you know, I do find it interesting. It's like, I do think a lot of the people that are following the story as close as we have, it's like, you know, in 10 years time or 5 years time, that's going to be its own network of sorts, you know, of like, you know, that's kind of like what I'm trying to do with my thing is how can I turn this into a place where people can go and get informed and educated and understand the future that we're building better. And Tesla is sort of the vehicle, like the thing, it's the thing that's bringing that future forward. Is bringing it to the present, but the propagation of this technology coming is going to create a brand new economy. It's going to create brand new societal dynamics. It's going to create brand new things for people to interact with and live with on a daily basis. I think that's a natural place for us to sort of start talking about instead of just being like, just Tesla. And it's like, no, it's Tesla. Tesla is like the kind of giving birth to this new world in a lot. Tesla and others, Tesla, NVIDIA, you know, you are Palantir, Robinhood, Coinbase, Lemonade. Like there's all these like stories, but Tesla's the biggest one because it's got the richest person in the world behind it. And arguably will probably have the biggest impact out of all of them.
A brand new economy coming about and Tesla's at the forefront. Yep.
So. Yes, sir. All right, man.
Cool.
Thanks, brother.
All right, Farzad. Good chatting.